Hello. I love that you're wearing that sweatshirt.
For those of you who may be watching the video, this is a sweatshirt that Mia bought for me during her Great American Adventure last year, 2024.
I love it.
I do too. And I was thinking of you this morning.
It's
so I was
so
like,
good.
I'm going to wear it. It's so
you look
soft.
Really nice. Yeah, and I want to say it's yellow. It's yellow, isn't it? It's like a
no. It's cream.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Please
beg
do.
Your pardon.
Your pardon.
I beg you all pardon. It's got from here. I mean, across the pond.
Yes.
It's got a very pale lemony yellow look, and it's gorgeous. It looks so nice on you. And your hair looks very nice.
Oh,
you
thank
look very
you.
Pretty.
This is day three of not washing.
Oh, it looks so good.
It's to the point where like you curl it and it just stays there.
I love dirty hair.
It's like, I didn't learn about dirty hair till I was in my 40s. And
Really?
I was like, wait a minute, we're not supposed to wash it every day? For any of you listening, we're not supposed to wash it every day. I had no idea. And then dry shampoo came along and I was like, done. I'm never washing it again.
I'm not a dry shampoo girl, but I do like dirty hair. It's more, you can do more with it. It's more malleable. You can bend it into shapes like,
and do the thing.
Like
And
pipe
it'll stay.
Cleaners, and it'll just stay in the shape. Love a bit of dirty hair. I'm wearing a sweatshirt.
Look at that gorgeous. Well, first of all, you're wearing a scarf. It's a really beautiful color.
Ali, this is so soft, it's ridiculous.
I'm going to crawl through my screen. I want to feel it.
It's literally the softest thing ever. And what was it called? Orange and wine.
Yes, please.
The colors.
I'll
so
take
it's kind
two.
Of like a sangria. Yeah.
Oh my God, I love it. It's beautiful.
It's yummy. It's so soft. And the sweatshirt, I really like the sweatshirt. I love that we're having a fashion chat. I love it. I love a bit of
transformation.
Transformational fashion. But it's long at the back. It's proper, you know, it comes down a little bit. So it's scooped a bit longer at the back. And it came, a neighbor gave me, she said, I'm throwing out some clothes. And I was like, oh, let me have a rummage. This was a while ago. I don't know, like years ago. And so the clothes had come from her mum. So they'd already been thrown out by her mum. They'd gone to her.
And she was throwing them out.
She'd had a rummage
and
she
were
was like,
I gotta
yeah,
see
and
this.
And I was like, I don't normally like this color. Like she really likes plum and wine and those sorts of things and maroon. And I'm like, ugh, don't like them. But I really love this sweatshirt. And I've worn it gardening. I've worn it out. I've worn it like, you know, all over the place. And I really like it. So I'm wearing that today. I'm drenched in sort of wine colors and
yummy
warmy colors,
warm.
which is really nice. And I would like to just, before we kick off to the like really important grown-up stuff, just like to say that I've just driven to Marlow to drop off three sacks, like three bags of clothes, because I have been, you know, Marie Kondoing.
Yeah.
And I have just taken these clothes, this really lovely little charity shop. So it's a thrift shop,
nice.
But it's kind of very boutique-y. They
Yes.
have really nice white, all the hangers are the same, and it's very beautiful. So when you go there, you feel like you're shopping in a really nice boutique.
Yeah.
And everything in there is secondhand. And I've just dropped these things off, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe that I've let these things go, that I've been keeping some of them for 30 years. I mean, beautiful things. 25 years. So yes, I'm sort of feeling, I don't know, particularly attached to this sweatshirt. All I've got left. It's all that's left.
That's
in the
right.
house to wear.
Wowee. Well
yeah,
done.
So that, yeah, thanks. I sort of feel like,
yeah.
Can't believe those things have been released. I sort of have half a vision in my head of me dashing back to the shop and going, oh, I was on medication. I didn't mean to, I was having a mad moment. I didn't mean to drop any of those things off. Give them back. But I won't, because obviously I was glad to let them go.
You've already said goodbye to them. Yeah,
I have. But I said a lot of other goodbyes as well. Oh, I love you. Bye. In the car. I love you. Bye.
Oh my gosh. Full circle then.
Madness.
Total completion. Well done.
Muchas gracias. So what are we talking about today other than fashion?
So what popped into my head, we can always go anywhere. Okay. One of the things that I'm noticing about myself, I had a client yesterday who was struggling with this as well, is victim mentality. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk, explore, dabble, and then see where we go.
Mm. I love that you use the word fun and victim mentality in the same sentence.
Oh, it's a real riot.
Yeah, absolute riot. Love that word. Mm. Cool. So
what is it? What is victim mentality? Yeah. You know, there's so many different, that's what I'm so fascinated by. I love how creative our minds get when it comes to being the victim. Because like there's the obvious where you just point. You're like, it's their fault. It's his fault, right? So anything external, like they're the reason, the collective they are the reason that I cannot do the thing that I want to do. So that's always like, that's the obvious one. But then there's like these, it's really popular right now. It feels like it's everywhere where it's like, I'm feeling a certain way because you're doing a thing. Mm. That is very victim-y. I think we've talked about it on a previous podcast where I was in a leadership development program there was just a woman in this program, and she at one point stopped the facilitator and said, I'm not feeling safe because you're not organized and I feel like you don't know what you're doing. And the rest of us were like, this is so awkward. Like she wasn't taking any ownership at all. Instead of requesting what she wanted, she like kind of blamed and complained.
Yeah.
She didn't. So it's victim mentality serves a purpose. It's awesome. Because it means I don't
and
have
fun.
To do shit. Oh, and it's super fun.
So much fun. Yeah, I think we're talking about here. Mm. I mean, I'm going to say this and you can see what you think. Common or garden victimhood.
Yeah.
So obviously there are circumstances in the world where people are victims. There may be traumatic circumstances where people might be victims of something. I'm going to put that to one side and say that's not what we're looking at.
We're not going there today.
Today. No, we're not looking at the heavy duty, perpetrator, victim situation in really traumatic circumstances.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to, thanks. I'm just want to kind of say that's not what we're looking at. We're looking at the more common or garden sort of run of the mill
day-to-day mentality.
Yeah,
where we kind of
day-to-day
slither
thing.
Out of things.
Yeah. Yes. Shirk off the responsibility. Mm. And you said just now that what this woman in this program did not do was she did not make a request. And
there were two things. She didn't make a request. Mm. And she didn't do what she needed to do. Like she was saying that she didn't feel safe. And she put that responsibility on the facilitator. And like, maybe this is too harsh, but I feel like if I don't feel safe, I need to do what I need to do to get there. Like, it's not your responsibility to make me feel safe. It's my responsibility to make me feel safe. If there's something I can request, like, hey, would you stop hitting me in my face? Okay, I'll make the request. I'm making it up. But I don't feel like the world owes me safety. Okay. And by the way, this is like intellectual because I'm a victim all the time. So I talk a good game, but okay. I do think it's much more empowering to see what can I do to create safety for myself in any, like it may be that she needed to go take a break or that she needed to not share what she didn't want to share and just accept that she didn't feel. I don't like, there were so many things that she could have done, but instead, in front of the group, she said, "You're making me feel unsafe." And I love that statement because it's like, nobody can make you feel anything.
Yes. And I think when I sort of, I go back to how we are trained.
Yes.
So when I think about how we train children or how I was trained, maybe as a child, I don't know that I was explicitly told to make requests about what I wanted. In fact, I think I may have been deterred. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. From doing that. Like, you know, don't be rude. It's really rude to ask for what you want. You know, can I have the last piece of cake? Like, for heaven's sake, don't be rude. Yeah. What kind of insane request is that? So I think I was probably trained not to ask for what I wanted or needed. And then that puts me in a position of sort of hoping it will float past me. And I can kind of, you know, it'll float near enough for me
subtly
to get
grab it.
It
without anybody
yes,
seeing.
Yes, I can get it. And I'm wondering for myself, I'm sort of thinking about myself here and thinking, is that where that has come from for me, that sort of not wanting to ask, not even seeing that it's an option, because it was never really presented to me. That in itself sounds victim-y. Why was that never presented to me, Alison?
They didn't present it to you.
They did
their
not.
Fault.
Yes. And obviously, as I've, I don't know if it is obvious, but as I've gone into the world of coaching and looked at all of these things, I've then had the advantage of learning about being at cause in my life and being at the effect of things that happen. And this isn't a new concept. It's sort of, you know, life is not so much about what happens, but it's what you do with what happens. That's not a new concept.
Not at
you
all.
Know, things will happen. It will rain. There will be, you know, there will be, you know, ups and downs in one's life.
Yeah.
It's not so much those, you know, shifting sands that matter as what you do with them.
Right.
And that's that empowered place where I'm, when I'm not being a victim at the whim and, you know, like a little boat tossing and turning on the waves of all these things that are happening, the tumultuous, you know, experience of life, I'm much more empowered. But I don't remember being, you know, right back as a child, being encouraged to be empowered and make requests.
Yeah.
And that feels go. You have something to say?
Sorry, I barely inhaled. You caught
me. Oh my
God. You're like, she's going to say a thing.
Can I just say, I've had 6 shots of coffee today. I normally only have 2. Normally only have 2. And then when I took the stuff into town to, you know, the clothing to release it back into the wild, I was with my eldest son and he was like, I'm starving. I said, okay, let's go and get some breakfast. And we ended up in a very nice little French bistro.
Oh,
it was
cute.
Very, very nice. And you and I have been there actually. You and I have been to that place. Yeah. And we went there and you got a coffee with your, he was like, oh, do this, have this breakfast thing. And you get a coffee and you get a smoothie. And I was like, oh my God. Okay.
Done.
So I had a flat white and then he came along, he was Portuguese speaking. And so, of course, we had a little bit of an exchange in Portuguese. And then he was like, I've accidentally made an extra coffee and I got it wrong. And like, would you like it? And I was like, sure. So now I've had 6 shots of coffee.
Yes.
Which is why
I
can tell what's going
to
happen on your face before it even happens. I can tell what you're thinking before you even think it.
Because I'm like, moved my mouth.
you thought about breathing in and I'm like, you want to speak? Tell me something.
My face barely moved.
Yeah.
Okay. Go. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. Well,
shit. What was I going to say?
I don't even remember. I'm switching. Had so much.
Okay. You need to take it down one
okay,
degree.
Okay. One notch.
And what the hell were you talking about? You were talking about the training. The training, as well as. There it is. So part of it is that we're not trained to ask for what we want. We're kind of trained out of it. Just get your needs met, figure it out. If it's offered, That's fine, but don't ask for the last piece of cake. Like, that's super rude. The second thing that I notice for myself, as well as a lot of the people I work with, is people don't know what they want.
May
So
I?
it's real hard to request it. I'm ready. Ready, go.
Oh, okay. And of course, if we've had voicing what we want trained out of us at age three, and I'm coming from, I have no idea if it's the same in America. You will be able to inform me. But, we have lots of sort of, codes and ways of being and, appropriate behavior and inappropriate behavior, and you must behave appropriately and, don't do that, and whispering and sort of, telling you how you need to behave. That whatever I wanted, that instinctive kind of like, I want this is pretty, I like this, that being trained out of me, of course, by the time I get to 35, 45, 55, I will have forgotten. I will not be in the habit
Of knowing.
of being able to tap into what it is I want. That's been trained out of me.
They go together.
They do. And then I'm definitely, there's this sort of blanket experience of, it's quite low level, but being a victim of circumstance. Well, I couldn't ask for what I wanted, so I just literally had to hope it rolled by me and that I could just get it without making a fuss. Yeah. That may just be my own personal perspective on it.
No, I have the experience of, like, the people pleaser in me has learned to push my needs, whatever they might be, so far to the back of the line that I can't even find them anymore. I have no clue what I want half the time. And so the practice of even trying to understand what it is I want and need is pretty difficult for me. So, you've been to America. We don't have the prim proper whatever it is that you just talked about. You've seen how we do things. We're pretty much like loosey goosey. I mean, that's not to say we don't have social mores and things, but
You're so fancy.
we're super, we're like, we're a little bit more rebellious than the Brits, I would say. And I think we do that just by the nature of how we were founded, right? Like, we aren't British, so we're not going to do those things. But I still was raised with, I don't know how I was trained. I do know that I felt the need to accommodate the needs of my parents, whether that was consciously put on me by my parents or just like that's just how our family was. I did feel very responsible for one of my parents. And so that was like, it was a very codependency type thing where it's like, I needed to make sure that their needs got met. And so I think, like, it's not that you can't do both. Like, can I get your needs met and my needs met? Of course, that's possible. But as a small child, you're just like, I was hyper focused on that. So, yeah, I think that plays a part. However, we're raised, our family of origin, the society that we grow up in, for sure. And the beauty of it is like, well, let me see. Let me check. Do you feel like victims get a lot of attention? Not the ones, the trauma, the one that we put off to the side, but just like regular, everyday, like government sucks. My neighbor's a jerk. Oh my God, do you want to hear what they did to me yesterday? Like, it's kind of a, it draws us in, right? What is that?
In response to your first question, can victims or can my victim-y behavior get me some attention? Yes, it can. Yesterday, I felt, did I feel victim-y? I felt rubbish yesterday. I felt overwhelmed and I felt not good enough. And what I did was I rang a friend and said, I feel overwhelmed and I feel rubbish. Can you say some nice things to me? And I suppose in that sentence, I was doing the thing that was trained out of me as a child. Well, I'm sort of thinking about my internal working model of the world that was put together in the first 1,000 days of life, and you know, and maybe up to, you know, five, six, seven. You know, I mapped out how to do things, and I knew that it was rude to ask. So, you know, I wasn't asking for what I wanted. Now, after a bit of training in my adulthood in recent years, and I'm 107, so you know, late to the party. But yesterday I was able to ask for what I wanted, and I think I was feeling victim-y. I was kind of like, oh, everyone's better than me, and I'm rubbish, and I don't know enough about this, and I don't know enough about that, and I've got too much to do, and I can't do it all. And you know, I was feeling all these horrible feelings. But where I maybe shifted out of victimhood was where I actually actively used my agency, and I asked for some support. I was like, say nice things to me, please. So it wasn't covert, it wasn't hidden. I wasn't manipulating the other person. They said some nice things to me, and it helped a bit. I mean, I could have done with them saying some more nice things. I don't know that I asked for more. I think I was just quiet and went, but no, I'm kidding.
It's rude enough to ask the first time. You're certainly
Yes,
not going to do
like
it
I'm gonna
twice.
be double rude and go, I need more. Say more. Say more nice stuff. Say something about my hair. Say how pretty I am. Yeah. I think I'm done with that train of thought.
No, I love it. So when you got the, did it take courage to ask?
No. No,
Oh,
because
well done.
that judgmental face they
Aren't
can.
your
Oh,
gonads
damn.
quite large? Well done, Mia.
No, it didn't. No, because I hadn't had any coffee at that point. No, it didn't take courage because a few things make up the cocktail of why it didn't take any courage. I know this person really well, and I can be utterly myself with them.
Okay, I'm getting really jealous because it wasn't me. And now I want to know who is this person?
You were asleep, otherwise it would have been you.
Okay, right on.
But you know,
Forgiven.
I know them well enough. I can say something and then go, actually strike that from the minutes. I didn't mean that. I've changed my mind. So I don't feel I need to censor myself and kind of show up a certain way. I can just be with them. I know they love me, so I feel really loved in that relationship. And also, I have had training, and I have practiced asking for what I want. You know, obviously make, you know, cack-handed, you know, attempts at it. Like yesterday, I probably could have done with a bit more because I was slightly aware of myself sulking in the car and sort of thinking, I didn't quite hit the spot. I want more. But I didn't ask for more. So there's definitely room for more practice. But no, it didn't take any courage at all.
Well done.
Thank you.
When I ask for things, I still get a wave of guilt. And I want to actually say there's a little wave of shame that's just an old patterning from when I was little that, like, kind of, because this morning, because of the timing of everything with the podcast, I don't actually have enough minutes to potty and walk the dogs. And this happens every other Friday, by the way, like for as long as we've been podcasting, which has been over a year.
We could change the
Oh,
podcast time.
we're not, first of all, yes, maybe. And every other Friday, I come home and Brian's minding his business. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't have enough time. Is there any chance you could? And it's like, this wave of like guilt and shame, just asking him to potty and walk dogs that are ours. Like, it's not like my dog and could you, and it's a neighbor that I'm at. It's like they're our pets and it still happens.
I
So,
can see
yeah.
something interesting in
Okay, do
that.
it.
Well, I'm just sort of wondering about because it's a repeat thing. So you're repeatedly putting yourself
Yes.
into this situation. So,
Yes.
every, you know, every two
So
weeks you're
who do I
having to go.
actually need to ask? No, I'm kidding. I need to
Well, I'm
ask
sort of
you.
thinking, well, I'm sort of thinking, you know, you could put an agreement in place and sort of like have it be more of a one and
Duh.
done thing.
Right. Yes.
Or we could change, you know, you
Yeah.
could ha make a request here
Right.
and make an agreement to change the time of this.
Could do.
But yes, that's interesting. I would like to just say that yesterday I didn't, it didn't take any courage to ask this person. That was one instance yesterday. I can't think of anything right now, but I know that shame and embarrassment and sort of like, ooh, feeling uncomfortable, feeling coy and shy about
Yes,
asking for what I
yes.
want are, you know, often available, if not
Well,
always.
I mean, I think being an entrepreneur, that's a big thing. You know, asking somebody, enrolling somebody to working with me, and then, you know, throwing out a monetary investment was really hard when I first started. It just, I felt so sleazy. And I think there was even some shame wrapped up, you know, it's just like everywhere. It was in there somewhere. And it took me years to get to the point where I could reduce the significance and the attachment that I had to that. Yeah. The other, oh, sorry.
No, go. I
You
was gonna.
inhaled. I'm only on my second coffee, so I'm a little slow.
Well, I was just thinking, how does that relate to victimhood or having a victim mentality? I can see with the dog walking that you've
Yeah.
made yourself the victim
Yes.
of, I mean, the
Of
victim's a
time.
harsh word, but you've made yourself the victim of your timetable, of time.
I mean, I have this podcast. I can't possibly.
And you stay, you've until this moment anyway, stayed in that pattern of like every other week, oh, I have to ask this thing. And
Yes.
that's kind of got a little bit of a whiff of victim. Well, obviously that's why you
For
mentioned it.
sure. Yeah.
But I'm not sure how the other stuff, like asking for money, I suppose, because it all ties back to
Well, I think the
asking for what we
victim,
want.
like, as I think of victim mentality, the first words out of my mouth is, I can't do that. I can't possibly. I can't ask for what I want. I can't demand this amount of money for the work that I do. I can't, you know, I can't enroll people into this weird concept. I can't provide an ROI to that, right? Like, it's just all this, like, I couldn't possibly.
So you're the victim,
I, yeah.
you're victim to your stories then. You're victim in that
Yes.
instance to your stories,
Right. That what kind of
your I can't
person?
stories.
I remember when I met some people that took the whole month of July and they take the month of December off. And I remember thinking, what kind of people are taking off 2 months every year? Who do they think they are? Right? So it extends to like other people getting their needs met, which tells you a lot about my thinking. Right? If I say something like that out loud to somebody else, that tells you what I believe. And I believe that that is probably something like maybe it's selfish or it's, you know, not professional or something, right? What kind of person asks for last piece of cake?
Yes, and it goes back to rude and you know, rudeness and etiquette and what's appropriate and what's allowed, and what isn't. And I'm finding this interesting because I'm sort of thinking, oh, yeah, it's actually this sort of thread that's running through, potentially running through a lot of my thinking. Informing a lot of my thinking about what is acceptable, what is unacceptable. And I fall victim to that thinking.
Yes. So as I think about like parenting, leadership, being in charge of people, this is a very like it's so common, and it's also not terribly effective. It's kind of effective, otherwise we wouldn't do it. But there's more effective ways to get things done. And I remember sitting in therapy with my daughter, and the therapist was saying, okay, so here's the three. I can't remember what the model is, but it's like, here's the three positions, the triangle, the drama triangle, I think they called it. It was like the bully, the victim, and like, I don't remember the third one. And she's like, which one do you think you are? And I was just like, I thought I was the other one. And then she asked my daughter who she thought I was. And she's like, I think she's the bully. And then they asked me who I thought my daughter was. And then they asked my daughter who she thought she was. And it was so funny because we did not, neither my daughter nor I said we were the victim. And the therapist said, do you want to know what I think? Yes. And she said, great. You guys are in a race to get to the victim position first. And I was like, what kind of asshole
Paying for this.
says that out loud? So, a lot of times, I think we aren't aware of it. And it's so obvious to everyone around us. So, if you're a parent, if you're a leader, if if you're on a team, whatever, you're in a relationship, careful, right? Because we're like, oh, I'm not the, I hate victims. Oh, I can't stand. Bullshit. You do it. You're doing it. And not only that, you probably don't even know when you're doing it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, for some reason, I don't know why, but the idea that it's ridiculous. It's the core of the work that we do, but that I live at the effect of my thinking. Obviously, that's the whole core of our work. But that I am, but when I put the word, I am a victim of my thinking, that has something else happen in my mind. I'm kind of like, ooh. I'm not in command of what's happening there. It's running me. That story is running me. I'm not running it. I don't know why that's maybe the coffee, but it's definitely kind of making something go fizzy in my brain. I'm like, ooh.
I think of victim as being like, it's what I do when I'm lazy, when I just don't wanna. I just don't want to. And then I can be the victim. And that gives me an escape hatch. You know? It's awesome. Like it works. It just, there's consequences to it. It's not that it's wrong or that it isn't effective. It's not the most effective. It's pretty effective at getting things. I have a client who they get their needs met through, they can't express themselves in any other way than through the victim route. So they start by like crafting the whole thing through the victim perspective. You know, I've had these terrible things happen to me because of, I couldn't do this, that, or the other thing because of all these external factors. And what's interesting is like, well, maybe this is where we can start to transition into like, so what do we do, right? So we all do it, fine. I think you and I are on the same page. If we agree that's all that matters, it means that we're right. So big deal. So what do we do? Like we've pointed out how it works, but what do we do if we're in it, or what do we do if we're with people who are in it? Do you have, I have an approach that I love. I'll share it first because I'm already
Yeah, go
talking.
if you have,
And I learned this with teenagers, and I call it teenage whispering, was to validate. So teenagers are like real good at being a victim, right? They're really good at being like, ah, everybody's against me. My teachers hate me and whatever. So they'll like, you'll get a kid that comes home from school and they're just like talking about how dumb and stupid everybody in the world is. And what I learned is if you can validate the feeling that they're having, it like calms their nervous system. Wow, you sound like you've had a bad day, or wow, you sound frustrated. Or oh gosh, it sounds like maybe there's some betrayal that happened today. And it doesn't even matter if you're right, if you're close, it seems to work really well. So for this client, what I do when they go into this like victim-y, I'm this way because of all of those things, I just start by validating. Wow, that sounds really heavy. That sounds really disappointing. Wow, I can really hear that you're let down. You feel very let down right now, unappreciated, unimportant. And then they settle. And it's almost like the victim mentality is a protection mechanism so that we don't have to, I don't know. I don't know how to end the sentence, but it feels to me like it is a protection.
Don't have to be with the hurt. Don't have to, I don't know, don't have to look inside.
I think that's it. It's so that I don't have to look at my part in all of it, which is hard and confronting.
And I'm thinking about, so that's being soothed by somebody else. That's a choice you're making when you see you think someone is being is sort of in a victim mindset in front of you. You do that, and I suppose in terms of, so what do we do about it? I asked, like, I'm feeling all of these horrible things. I asked for that soothing experience. Please say nice things to me, which soothed me. And then I'm thinking about when I don't ask somebody and somebody doesn't notice or isn't near me to notice. So what do I do for myself if it's just me, myself, I in the room? And I think I'm getting more practiced at being kinder to myself when I'm in those. And I'm also not something I'm doing in terms of how to deal with is I don't hide it if I'm feeling like poor me, woe is me. I was in a group call this morning and I was still in the hangover of yesterday's feeling of not being good enough and whatever. And I shared last night with the people, see you on the call tomorrow, and I haven't done the things I said I was going to do, and I feel like bleh, I feel rubbish, and shared everything. And then talking to those people today, by not hiding how I was feeling, helped to soothe my nervous system. And that was a choice I made. I could have said a bunch of other, brilliant things and operated over the top of it, but I didn't. I just shared. I'm feeling a bit vulnerable and a bit low and a bit victimy or whatever and a bit rubbish. And by sharing it, I felt soothed.
What do you think the impact on the group was from your sharing?
I don't know.
What is the impact on you when someone shares their inner workings?
Okay, well, one of the group replied yesterday and said, I haven't done what I was going to do either. So maybe it creates some kind of clearing in the space, to be honest. Maybe it does that. Maybe it encourages people to feel they don't need to mask and they can turn up as they are. Maybe it creates, I mean, I'm probably just saying versions of the same thing, the
Well,
opportunity to show up authentically.
yes, and they don't have to fix it or carry it for you.
No.
When you're like, hi, I'm going to be real victim-y right now. I'm going to just, I didn't do the thing. I have a thousand excuses for why I now feel this way. And that is a really responsible way of sharing, such that now everybody in the group didn't feel like they were like, oh my God, do you need me to come over and help? Can I do it for you? Have you tried this? Because that tends to happen a lot. And I think that's why victim mentality works, because like, you come in from a place of weakness and then people rush in. It's almost like a magnet to people like me, people pleasers, to come in and fix and solve and rescue and save. And so it gets their needs met, but.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I had a thought, sort of like, oh, yes, but these women are coaches, so of course they knew not to rush in and save. But then I'm thinking, actually, I think that's a red herring. I think it's not dependent on the other people's skill or knowledge. It's dependent on how I share.
Agreed. Yes.
If I
I
share from a
was
place of responsibility and
right.
ownership. Yeah, no, I'm just having a little thought thing there that I'm sharing. Yeah.
I think that's where it's important for all of us to note that when, so I have a story of some clients that I worked with, and they were going through a really difficult time. They were a married couple, and they were separating in the marriage. And a lot of what we, when we talk about, like, okay, how is this going to impact the team? Because they owned a business together. And there was some talk around, like, well, everybody kind of knows something's off. And so what we need to do as leaders is say something about it, because if we don't, then they're going to make something up in their minds and it's not going to be accurate. How do we share in a way that it is responsible? So how do we share with the team such that the team doesn't feel they need to do anything for the owners? And we crafted a really powerful message, and then we just kept coming back and updating, you know. And what the owners ended up asking for was just some space. Like the way, because one of the things is, like, the team wants to help, right? We're all here together. We all love each other. We want to help each other. And so when someone comes in and they're like, "Eh, I'm in breakdown, you know, I'm having a hard time," people are like, "Oh my God, what can I do?" So if you can share responsibly, "I'm in breakdown, I'm having a hard time," and then you share something that people can do, it's super helpful. So, like, what you did is you're like, "I feel rubbish. I'm going to call my friend. I feel like crap. Will you tell me a bunch of good shit about me to my face?" Right? So that's a way you can help. And so that's what they did, is they then said, "I know you all want to help us. And so what we're asking for is just, you know, a little bit more space and a little bit more generosity in with each other, some more soft and gentleness with each other, because things are going to get a little rocky for us."
And all of that, Ali, is about being aware of what's happening inside of ourselves and sharing as clearly and cleanly as we can with others. So taking responsibility for what we're feeling, taking ownership. And that doesn't mean that we can't have a conversation with somebody about something that isn't working. We can, you know, I don't have to put up with something in a relationship, be it a personal relationship or a professional relationship. That is not what this is about. It's not about putting up with stuff. It's about understanding what's happening for me, taking responsibility for what I am responsible for being, you know, mindful of my own emotions, my own experience, sharing responsibly. So not that this is all about you, but this is how I feel. Can we have a conversation if there is something that I that doesn't work for me professionally or personally?
Yeah, it's so I think about the scenario with, so I've got this thing, I can't sleep with my husband because he snores. Okay, that's a victim stance. I can't do the thing I want to do because he's doing a thing. It's also true. The snoring does wake me up, and then I'm unable to get back to sleep because it is so loud and disruptive to my sleep. Fine. But that's not empowering. And what ends up happening from that place is then I become angry and resentful because he makes a noise with his face while he's sleeping, which he can't control. And so what has happened is we've, like, this has been 6 months of us, like, me being mad, him getting up in the middle of the night, leaving the room because I'm like, "God damn it," you know, like, you know, trying to wake him up, and he's like, "I'll just go in the other room." Well, that doesn't work either. I don't want him to not be in the room. So this, like, this whole thing, it's so funny. We talk about it in therapy. Like, that's where we are in our marriage. Like, the snoring is our biggest problem. So fine. What ended up happening is I started to take on, what can I do? Because I want to sleep in the same room with him, and I want to be able to sleep through the night. I want both. I can sleep fine in a different room in our house. Kids are grown and full, and we've got rooms. I don't want to not sleep with him. I like being in the same bed and in the same room with him. So that's what I want. How do I make that happen? And once I took on that stance, it was energetically different for me. It was a much more pleasing way of being about it, and it wasn't so significant. And you would laugh at all the contraptions I have by my bed that I am trying. I kind of have found a thing that sort of works most of the time. So we're getting closer. And it now it's become like, okay, I'm working towards something versus like, well, I guess I just can't have the thing that I want. And I think about how many people, how many of us are running around the world not getting what we want because of, and then fill in the blank.
Yeah, once we make it about somebody else,
it's over.
Yeah, because they're the only person who can do anything about it. And that would be so easy to do with his snoring.
Right. And and that's where I find that, like, I was defensive. I'm like, but I can't sleep with the snoring. It's true. It is real.
Yes, which makes it really, really sticky and tricky.
Annoying. Yeah.
Because you're kind of like, but it's true. Yes, it's true. So it looks like there's nowhere else to look.
Right.
But if I want
he needs
to sleep,
to fix it.
Yeah, if I want to sleep with this snoring human, what can I do?
Right. Do I have to leave the room?
That doesn't involve making him do things necessarily,
right.
But it's about me doing things
right.
That help me to get what I want, which is to sleep with that snoring human.
Right. And when it started, I was like sleeping in another room and I was like, wait a minute, I shouldn't have to because he's the problem.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like Al-Anon, right? You go into Al-Anon and you're like, I am married to an alcoholic. How do I get him to stop? And they're like, thanks for coming. We'll see you next week. Because that's not your problem. Your problem's you. And when you're living in an alcoholic home, you're like, no, I don't think you guys understand. And they're like,
yeah. Oh, and this is tying back into a conversation I know we had a while ago, but when I have to take responsibility, then I get very uncomfortable because I'm thinking about a relationship I have where the person probably wants to see me more than I want to see them.
Uh-huh.
And by not seeing them as often as I think they would like to see me,
yeah,
I have a whole pile of opinions about myself. So it's much easier for me to do the thing.
Yes.
That I think that they're kind of messaging to me that they want.
And just be resentful about it.
And just be a victim of it, kind of like, well, they do this and they do that and they say this and they say that. So I have to go and it's my duty and I have to do the thing. So I go, but I hate it and I'm a victim of how needy they are and all the rest of it. If I put that down, then I need to be with myself and the fact that I do not want to go and see this person as often as I used to or as often as they might want me to. And what does that mean about me?
Right.
What kind of person? Then I'm sort of getting closer because I can then see that I am at the effect of my own thinking. I am falling victim to my thinking of what kind of person would that make me if I didn't do that. And I, you know, I planned my weekend this morning, which was one of the things I did in that call with these coaches. And just shuffling my papers, I feel like a newsreader.
We're on the news.
And I wrote this person's name on my thing as a thing that I needed to do this weekend. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I've put it here and I don't want to do it. So I've actually scrubbed it out and I've moved it to a place where seeing that person is what I actually want to do at that point in my weekend.
Damn.
Yeah. But it's kind of like, what kind of person? My eyes twitching again.
It is.
The caffeine and the stress. It's like, yeah, because I don't want to be, it's much easier for me to be a victim of that person's demands than be a demand for what I want.
Yes.
And then look at what I think that makes me as a person, what that means about me as a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cringy.
It reminds me of, I was in a group that works with horses. And so you're there developing yourself using the horse as a way, as an honest, immediate feedback mechanism, right? Horses are just honest. They give you immediate feedback. And so It's like this really beautiful, and they don't have like weird hang-ups about like making you feel a certain, they're just a horse, right? They're like, you're not congruent, you're not breathing, you know, you're not safe, whatever. So they give you this feedback. And so you're the whole purpose of working with horses is to have your experience with your horse. And I was in a group, and this one woman kept saying, well, I noticed that this other person wasn't able to do this. We were trying to like, they had us doing different exercises with the horse. And she was like, I noticed that this other person couldn't do it. And so I was gonna like, it made me really sad because I really wanted her to have the experience. And she went on and on. And then the facilitator said, okay, can we ask a question of the group? And she was like, sure. And the facilitator said, okay, guys, how much time did she just spend focusing on somebody else? Versus how much time did she talk about her own experience? And everyone's like 90, 10, 95, 5, right? And it's like it was easier for her to watch all the other people and whether or not they were getting what they needed than it was for her to focus on her experience and what she could learn about herself. And I think this is just one more way that our brilliant minds keep us from being confronted. Like, what kind of person doesn't go visit whatever on a regular basis? What kind of person asks for the last piece of cake? What kind of person, I'm trying to do something with the snoring, I can't get there. It doesn't matter. You get the point. It's so confronting. And this is just another tool in the tool belt of the mind. The mind is like, that's okay, cool. You're just a victim. Like you don't have to look at yourself. Look at all the other people. Look what they're doing. That was something that your son, I don't think he'll mind me saying this, your son said to me during one of our very long drives. He said, you know what I noticed about America is you guys all seem to really care what everybody else is doing. And I was like, yeah, it's real awesome. Because then I don't have to look at myself. I can complain about my neighbor. I can talk about my parents. I can, you know, talk about all. I do talk about the drivers on the road. It is one of the indicators of a society for me. How are we driving?
Yes, I've heard you talk about driving.
They're all distractions.
Yes, and the funny thing is that when I whatever dare to just be with my own experience and take responsibility for my own experience, I'm able to be more compassionate about other people as well because I'm able to look at my own experience with more, I don't know, whatever it takes. Maybe that does take courage sometimes. Takes a bit of compassion. Loving the bits that are wonky and off, and yeah.
So
Have we landed this
it
tiny
sure
little
felt like it.
biplane?
It
Yeah,
felt
we
like a
just came to
nice
a
little
nice,
home.
quiet, yeah, nice little quiet. Anything you want to share as a takeaway or a learning or a
What is my takeaway? My takeaway is that being a victim is a distraction.
Wow, nice and concise.
It's a distraction from me looking at myself. How about you?
That it allows me to avoid, very similar to you, allows me to avoid owning what I really think.
Oh,
Yeah.
nice. All right.
Bravo.
Well done today. We'll sign off. I hope
Ciao,
Tracy has a
ciao.
lovely weekend.
Yes. Toodle pip.